So what's the name of this podcast?
Eugene
Cast.
How am I supposed to pronounce that?
Oig Cast.
A huge cast.
Huge cast.
You're listening to
Huge Cast.
That's right. You're listening to Huge Cast, a volunteer-powered cooperative where we talk with people who may or may not live in the Eugene, Oregon area. We think they have some really cool stories to tell. Tell us what you think. And if you really want to do us a solid, leave us a nice, shiny, 5-star review. So, hey, this is JoJo, and today I'm talking with the amazingly talented Siri Vick. She's a singer, performer, and a vocal instructor who is simply amazing.
Now, sweet, JoJo.
Well, I have taken singing lessons from you, but I have also seen you perform on a number of occasions, and I was telling Chris, our audio engineer, a little bit earlier today, that the thing that I most admire about your performances is that you give everything to your performance, like everything. And I just, it's amazing to watch and to be in the room with that. So
Love that. Thank you. I don't know if everybody gets that. And it's not something I intend necessarily. You know, I mean, it's not like I'm giving everything, but it's, I think because I will like be nervous or, you know, have a really loud head, you know, lots of thoughts going on, that like the more I give all my energy to whatever we're doing on stage, the more quiet those thoughts get, or the more my nerves calm down.
Wow.
When I give everything,
right,
quote unquote everything, you know, so yes, that I think that's what that's about.
It's amazing. It shows to me. So amazing. So let me just say right out front, if you haven't seen Siri perform, where have you been? What is your problem? Get the tickets. She'll tell you at the end where you can find her. But I just thought we'd start at the beginning.
Sure.
About when you decided that performing and singing was your passion and your jam, and how you even started on that road. Because I mean, yeah. I sing in the shower, but that does not mean that I have any talent or want to pursue it. Like, I don't even want to be on The Voice, you know? I'm just like, no. So how did you decide, and how did you start?
Well, my mom's pretty musical. So I remember always singing songs with her playing the piano when I was real little, but mostly I've been sort of accidental with it. I mean, you know, I was in the church choir, school choirs, but I was a little bit reluctant, or just like, nah, whatever, you know. And it's not that I took singing for granted necessarily, but, you know, we're both Virgos. I mean, I'm just not, I was not the kid that was like, let me get up there and sing. I just, you know, I took piano lessons when I started when I was 7, and I continued until I was 17. And what happened is that when I was in middle school, I started to do more and more solo work at church. And it's just like the little choir at Central Lutheran Church. I mean, they did a lot of classical music. So I was comfortable with that idiom, you know, the like high church music, and I knew how to read music. So that's sort of how I got involved. And then it wasn't about singing so much. I just liked making music. But then at that tender age, I started to get some positive feedback or reinforcement about it. Like, you should audition for the musical. And I was like, okay. So, you know, but I was also at the same time really insecure, you know, unsure of myself, shy. Virgos are shy, by the way. Traditionally. So it never felt like I love doing this. This is amazing. It just sort of said yes to certain opportunities that came along. And I was just kind of awkward and chubby by high school. And so I started to just find a refuge in music. Like,
wow.
It's like, okay, my, you know, I feel really awkward at the kegger on the Butte.
Yeah.
Or feel like I can't run the rat race of popularity, but I have this place in the choir room, you know, so I just got more involved
that
way.
You found your people.
I found my people. Well, yeah. Sort of. I mean, there are some really gung-ho choir people I would be singing with, and I, let's see, it was like on the cusp of the 90s, so I was just starting to be like, this sucks, you know, just like kind of, you know, like, what would you call it? Not so much rebellious, but bad attitude, cynical, mm-hmm. cynical, yeah. And so,
and that's,
but
is that
my
bad?
Place. Right, I know.
Cynical, that's bad?
See, I mean, it was just
I'm in trouble then.
I know. Yeah. It was my reason. I think I've softened since then. It was my reason for living back then, was to just make fun of everything, you know? So I was just never like a gung-ho joiner, but it was definitely a place where I was like, I have this thing.
Yeah.
So so then I went on to music school from there.
No, where did you go to music school? That was for after high school, right?
That was a big... big important thing was that I started to take voice lessons from a graduate teaching assistant at U of O.
Wow.
Her name was Wendy Zaro Fisher, and she was so charismatic, and I was 15, and I'd meet her every Saturday, and she fixed a few things in my voice, but she also started to say, like, you could do this. You could go on, and I can see you doing opera.
Wow.
And that seemed so specific and so different that I was like, that's where I want to be. I want that to be my new thing. And I don't know if I had a special knack for it. She just encouraged me. And we had such a connection. She went off to be a professor at the University of Kansas. And I wasn't like, oh, I really want to go to school specifically at the University of Kansas, but I did want to go to a big school, get out of state, and I auditioned several other places, and it just felt like I started to hear a lot of people say this, that go follow a teacher, go follow a mentor, not necessarily a prestigious program.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
So I went there to graduate school at Cincinnati Conservatory of Music, and that was a much bigger pool. It was very, they called it one of the big three, along with Juilliard and...
Wow.
Where else was one of the big three? Oh, Indiana University for,
really?
For classical voice. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know, right? Nobody knows
Indiana?
About it.
What?
This is a fun fact, is that at University of Cincinnati, at CCM, it was funded by the inventor of the doorbell.
What?
I know. Random, right?
Funded.
Well, so they have so much money from the person that invented the doorbell. Whatever.
Yeah.
so that, you know, if you have like a huge endowment, I think
for
you
sure.
can make a lot happen. So.
Yeah. That's insane.
I know. Yeah.
Cool, though.
It's pretty cool.
Well, see, random things happen. So,
right?
You
I know.
Know.
Random things do happen.
Okay. That should be on like a trivia quiz. Right.
I know.
So you came back here. Did you, because this is home. So you came back here. And
so I did. I came back home. Before that, I moved to New York.
Oh, right.
And that was in 2003. And the plan was, okay, you've done some graduate school. Like, that's the next natural step, is that you
right.
move to New York and try to find yourself an agent, try
right.
to get in shows. But right at that time, I was starting to move away from opera, and I thought, well, maybe I could do musical theater. I won this award for German cabaret music, which is sort of arcane, but it's the composers of the Mack the Knife, the Threepenny Opera, Mack the Knife. That song comes from the Threepenny Opera, and so it's very like dark, kind of burlesque music.
Right.
Anyway, it's sort of classical, but sort of musical theater, sort of Broadway. So I'm like, I'm going to go do that now. So
yeah.
The only issue is that I was terrified, had friends, and I moved with my best friend, but really no plan. And
wow.
I found myself, it was just so, it was such an ordeal just to wait tables, you know, do the hours waiting
yeah.
tables, and like taking the train to my temp job. And I never went to auditions, and I just got really lost. You know, I was partying way too much. And
how old were you at this time?
28.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I started a doctorate degree in Cincinnati.
Wow.
But I mean, it was mainly just to hide out. I mean, like, I always say, in certain circumstances, graduate school for music is not that as rigorous.
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, you're not like, I mean, you can write, you'll write a dissertation and do the whole
sure.
thing, but in a way it's not, I guess I just didn't get to that point.
What
are
wow.
they? Yeah. So
that's intense though.
It is kind of intense. I was,
yeah,
sort of a nerd.
Yeah. Well, then so. You throw yourself into New York and you're just like, holy crap.
Right.
Because that's like, that's just not like, that's big time. That is big time. And people
yes.
that will, you know, claw your
yes.
throat out for the same kind of opportunities. And if you aren't 100% this is what I'm doing.
That's right.
You know, that it will eat you alive.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I was born and raised in Eugene. It's a wonderful place to grow up, right? But
yeah.
I hadn't experienced being the new kid. I hadn't experienced life outside of the school structure.
Yeah.
Of,
oh, wow.
You know, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't a self-initiator very well. I was like, oh, you want me to do that? Great. I'll do a really good job. But I
right.
Yeah. Like you said, I didn't have a vision or a plan. I just wanted somebody to tell me, like, you are good enough to be in our show.
Right.
You get the award.
Right.
And that was just, that was a losing proposition for sure. You know, I
yeah.
mean, because, I mean, I could barely even get a day job. I mean, that was difficult. Just handing
yeah.
my application into Benihana or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, you know,
yeah.
just so.
Well, that's an intense shift of life and,
yes.
you know,
yes.
and everybody's, yeah, that's intense. So that so didn't work out. So you came back to Eugene.
Yeah, I did. And I thought I would just kind of take a breather. I was dating a guy, you know, that I needed to like some space from. So I really thought I was going to be visiting my parents, but I just stayed. And at that point, I really had a turning point. You know, I mean, it's not only that, I mean, I was drinking a lot. And so when I was living in New York, and I didn't see it necessarily as a problem, but I felt like I couldn't really manage life at all. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it was hard to get out the door.
Yeah.
When I was living in New York. And so when I came back here, it wasn't that crisis of a situation, but I ended up going into rehab. And from there, just, you know, day by day, week by week, I got more and more involved in the recovery community here in Eugene. And then months after that, I met my now husband. So
uh-huh.
that's why I feel like it really was meant to be, but that's
yeah.
why I stayed for sure.
That's
so,
awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
It's really worked out.
Well,
okay.
You not that you gave up on that dream, but you found a new dream here, because which has been, at least in my point of view, is incredibly successful.
Mm.
And it's like, I don't even know how to formulate this question. It's that you have a world-class trained caliber talent and that comes back to Eugene and decides to still, you know, perform and still do that. And did, you know, how did you go about that? I mean,
mm-hmm,
one of the
mm-hmm.
things that I'm just very interested in general is how people who are artists in any, with any medium, how they decide that they can live their life as that artist and make it work. So, and you have. No pressure,
I
but
have.
Tell me
no,
all.
I mean, yeah. So my first thought upon getting on my feet here was, I'm going to go get a graphic design degree. And at the time I was like, nah, I'm just going to go do that. You know,
right.
not that that's an art, not an art all in to itself, but I was definitely considering abandoning singing as a career.
Wow.
Because it was pain. It's painful. It's painful to put yourself up there as a performing artist and to have something in you that wants to come out, but you know, with that you're signing up for a lot of self-reflection, feedback, you know, just feedback from the world about, you know, the work, its value, your
right.
art's value. And so
right. You have to get good with feedback.
Yeah, you have to get good with feedback. And really, I didn't... This has been the journey since coming back to Eugene, is to be more and more curious about what there is to learn.
Really?
Yeah, I think at that time I was more invested in what I know, you know, because of whatever, right. You know, feeling like, you know, I have to prove myself.
Yeah. Right. These are my credentials.
Exactly.
So this is why I'm valuable.
Yes, I'm valuable, yeah. Don't you? Yeah, exactly. Right. Not believing it myself quite, right. You know.
Well, how did you make that leap from, you know, graduate New York performer back to Eugene and making that leap that you were going to start performing?
Right. So I remember this definitive moment when I was asked to sing at my family's church, my home church, and that's always comfortable. It's got great acoustics in there, you know, and I was singing some spiritual, and my old music teacher came up to me, that she happened to be in the pews, and I ran into me in the parking lot, and she had tears in her eyes, and she was just like, you have a gift, you have something, you know, you have something to say. I feel like something's speaking through you. And I remember being so upset after that conversation, and I was really asking the universe or my higher power, just, what do you want from me? I mean, it's seeming like it's not going so great, but what do you want from me?
Yeah.
And like 2 days later, an old classical singing friend, David Gustafson, he's a operatic tenor, he called me and was like, we need another teacher at LCC. And it was such a deal of timing because...
Yeah. You were ready.
Slid right in there. Well, yeah. I've learned so much. That was in 2006, and so I've learned so much through what, you know, just month after month, year after year, what doesn't work for students, you know.
Yeah.
And that sometimes it feels like that was my real training ground, you know.
Right.
About what it is to be a singer, the psychology of a singer. How a singer makes changes in their voice. Sometimes it's not as straightforward as the textbooks might tell you, you know. So then the next big thing that happened was, I had a baby soon after that, and I started to feel like, well, I at least want to use my talent. I was aware of what the Shed did. Somebody told me there was an audition, so I got a role as Glinda the Good Witch in The Wizard of Oz the following year. And then I felt like...
Like, that's perfect casting for you, by the way.
Right? I was totally stressed out and terrified.
But did you have fun?
I did have fun. I mean, something about me is that I don't... I have fun when...
It's
you know,
over.
We're loose. Yeah, when it's over. Yeah. Exactly. Definitely when it's over. And, you know, I just didn't know anybody. I was kind of new to town, or not new to the performing community. And so, you know, and I'm very, very eager to please. But so after that, after doing that role, I drafted an email and probably sat on it for months. With no real confidence, I emailed the executive director at the Shed and said, you know, I kind of have this specialty in this certain kind of music. Would you be interested in producing this? Or you know, would there be any possibility in somehow bringing this to your jazz festival? Because it's, you know, some of those songs have become jazz standards. And he's like, you know, it's not a great fit for OFAM, for the Oregon Festival of American Music. But, you know, we could just put it on during the year. And... So that was my first show with the pianist Natalie Fortin, and that was the main big thing I did. And you know, I had mentors, very supportive people to help me walk through my fear around, you know, pounding the pavement and putting myself out there. And I feel like there was here and there. I mean, I was working on putting myself out there,
yeah,
you know, with video or social media or YouTube pretty consistently, and it was always hard for me.
It's hard. Well, self-promotion always is. And so, I mean, I know quite a few artists in terms of writers and just about everybody that's like, I just want to have somebody do all that for me, and I just want to create the art. And I'm like, wouldn't that be delightful for all of us? But
yes,
you know, it's like, that's like the one in the gajillion people who, you know, they move to Hollywood, they have one audition, they're famous. It's like, no, most of us are busting our butts day in and day out to kind of get that going.
That's right.
And it does take, sometimes it takes just the one time for you to get out there and something will happen. And sometimes it just takes more time. But
I know you know that. And sometimes my head will do me in, and I'll just be like, I hate this. Yeah. You know, I mean, and I, you know, just, I just take a break. I might take a break.
Oh,
you know,
totally. But. So, because sometimes I'm just like, I'm not doing that today. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing that today, or not doing that this week. Right. I will take it up next week, or I'll take it up next month, or whatever. Because sometimes I just don't want to slog. And other times I'm just like, everybody needs to stand back because I'm on a roll now. I'm on fire.
Absolutely.
You know, with the marketing and the things and the getting out there and the doing of the stuff. And, you know, and sometimes I just am like, I'm just going to do the things I need to do and then go take a nap.
You totally. Know? Absolutely.
So it's all an ebb and flow. And you can't go full out all the time. And the people that say they do are lying.
And some people are, it has become, you know, their whole, you know, they're very monofocused.
For sure.
You know, and that comes with its own drawbacks, I suppose. But
nobody else is going to clean my house but me.
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
Laundry still has to get done.
Right.
You know? So, I don't know.
You know, I do enjoy editing a video or crafting some post. It's just that it happens to take me 5 hours, and I'm sure I'm being too perfectionistic about it, but that's been the challenge, is just to get it done, get it out there, you know. So
well, and aren't you, correct me if I'm wrong, which I'm sure I am, is once you finish a show, have you already thought about the next show? Are you already in planning for the next show? How does that work? Do you just kind of go, I'm done with that show, I'm going to have like a month rest, and then I'll start thinking about the other one? Or are they constantly in some stage of preparation?
That's a good question. I would say there may be one or two shows that are on my radar and on the Shed's radar. And gosh, it's been 10 years since I've been working with the Shed. So Jim Ralph, Ginevra Ralph, and I will just continue the conversation constantly. And often, you know, I will be like, I'm going to take a 5-year break, you know.
Right. Right. I am so over this.
Right. You know, and they're pretty masterful at just saying, you know, what do you think next, you know, or how about this? And there have been times that's really, it's just been just the right little idea for me to explore, because my favorite part of building a show is the research.
Along with performing, are you creating music that people can buy online? Can they listen to you on Spotify? Is that part of your overarching portfolio now, since there's so much music online?
It should be.
Oh, okay.
I have
no
some
pressure.
Music. I have, you know, I made 2 recordings of songs from my French show. Uh-huh. And that show, I happen to have done it the most, but it also seems to have the most ability to grab the audience.
The French show.
Yes, La Vie en Rose, the Edith Piaf.
Right. I think we have a sample of that.
Yes, you do.
So let's just take a quick break and we'll just play a quick track from that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So you're
that was
welcome.
Gorgeous and amazing. So you can buy that track online.
Yeah, CD Baby. I believe that's hooked up to iTunes.
Okay.
I have a website. We're on the subject. It needs to be updated. Right. But
no pressure.
You can buy the track CD.
Is it SiriVic.com?
Yes.
What was that track?
That was La Mer. And people might recognize it because it was adapted and became Beyond the Sea.
Oh.
Somewhere Beyond the Sea. But it was originally a French song.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it has a little different meaning. So when we worked with an arranger to transcribe the song into music for our band, we wanted it, because it's really kind of a prayer, an ode to the sea. And so it's got that more of a tranquil feel rather than a swing romantic song. So
right.
Anyway, so that's kind of the way I nerd out.
Nice. And people can get that on?
Oh, yes. Spotify, iTunes. That's my French album. And that's what they, yeah.
So they can buy
CD Baby. Yeah, they can buy
just the
tracks.
Nice.
And how can buy the album, I guess.
How long ago did you record your last album?
So that was, okay, so, yeah, that was 2012. I recorded two albums.
Any plans to go back into the studio or do a live recording or something? Really?
Yes.
Yay!
Yes. And I have, I have a few live performances that are sort of in the can with video and.
Oh, cool.
And some were recorded on a nice soundboard that, you know, we could potentially look at. But I need to get in the studio again. And I recorded on the quick, quick and dirty, small budget. I mean, that's common nowadays, but I would really, my goal is to just go in and mindfully really, really do it myself. A lot of times I was collaborating or, you know, you have to make these pragmatic decisions,
sure.
You know? And so the reason I've taken so long is just that I want it to be just a really creative expression that I'm seeing through all the way.
Right.
So it's just a matter of either jumping in and doing it or making the time. I'm not sure.
Because those things don't just happen.
Right.
I mean, that's like building a house, right?
It's like building a house.
And you have family and a kid and a husband mm-hmm. and like teaching and performing at the shed and, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like.
That's right.
I understand. That's a block of time. And it is building a house, especially if you want to do it yourself.
Right.
But I'm glad. I'm glad you're doing that because, I mean, we just looked you up on Spotify.
Right.
That's exciting. I mean, it's Spotify worldwide.
And it's pretty cool.
It is really cool, which I'm just going to get back to that question that we talked about before, which was, here you are, a world-class talent, performing in Eugene, having a creative life here in the small town, smallish town, and yet your stuff, your music is available to a worldwide audience. Does that, you're just like, that's just every day for me now, or does that blow your mind?
I think it's really cool.
It is cool.
You know, if someone from another country emails me or like, you're great, or, you know, you get a little comment from somebody that seems to not be from the U.S., it's like, wow, that is so great. It makes my day, you know?
Yeah.
So it definitely don't take that for granted. It's funny, you and I used to talk about vision, you know, having a creative vision and how you get there. Like the key is knowing what you want. And 10 years ago, I didn't know what I want. I don't know that I know what I want now, but I didn't know that was the question to ask.
Right.
You know,
It's a big question.
It's a huge question.
Yeah.
Right. So at the time, it was like, I want to be able to be on Fresh Air or Garrison Keillor's show. I want to be able to, you know, I don't do pop music, but I wanted to be able to be on the national stage. This was like 5-7 years ago. And I really did do a lot of footwork, this recording, this French recording, a lot of shows. And I started to take my show on the road and market it to places out of state or Portland. And I did some performances out of town, took my shows. And what I learned is that it is so grueling. It is so unbelievably grueling to be out there on the road. Sometimes they were really successful performances. Most of the time they were. You know, I think I found some good fits. But the expense of time and headspace with my family, just physically, the grueling process of packing up my stuff. And, you know, and that process begins so far back, being the leader of a band.
Yeah.
Incredible amount of footwork, actually, if you're the driver to make five people, you know, sign up with you and continue with you, rehearse it, you know, so many little logistics involved with that. Having a family definitely was a factor, but I felt like, I don't think I made a conscious decision, but at some point it was like, I'm going to do what I want to do here.
Yeah.
And it was enough.
Yeah. You know? Well, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, set me straight, as it were. But I think that you can still have an international platform and not leave your home with YouTube, with Spotify, with all of the ways to get out in front of people. I don't think you have to leave your front room anymore.
You don't.
And I don't think that's a bad thing, because we're seeing all of these amazing people that are doing, that do amazing stuff and are amazing artists, and they do it right from their YouTube channel.
Absolutely.
And you can just become a huge fan of theirs, and you don't, you know.
That's right.
You don't ever see them on Good Morning America. But you like tune into their YouTube channel every week when they drop another song.
Right.
And that to me is amazing. And you can discover all sorts of people by doing just that. And you never have to leave your house now. And then, you know, if people want you to come to Portland, they can pay for it.
Exactly. And be creative. Like,
yeah,
you can be creative. Now, in my case, what I encountered, and maybe I just needed some practice with it, but it's a different medium than having a live audience.
Oh, for sure.
I feel like something that I am bringing is, it may be dependent on the audience, I'm not sure, but it's different. You know, something happens that makes the experience of the live show seem much magnified to when I do, you know, if I'm comparing it to the studio. And yeah, I mean, you've got my interest peaked now, because I'm like, would love to do that in the, you know, the comfort of my studio at home.
Sorry. I'm really good at giving people a to-do list.
I love
it. Here's 12 things that you could be doing. And it's just like, but I don't want to go do my own stuff, so.
I know, right? I
mean, and everything in all, it's due time. I mean, I don't think that there's never a wasted experience. And if you're not ready to do something, it's totally fine. I see that all over the place with my people, that when we're ready, it magically starts to just unfold. But the first thing we have to do ever is just be ready. That's it. You know, and I love that question. Well, what is it that you want? You know, what do you want to do? What do you want your days to look like? You know, what is it that you want? And that seems to be like the jaw dropping question of all questions, but it's relevant to everybody. You know, if you're struggling, you don't know what you do, you don't know where you want to go, you don't know anything, you just say, what do you want?
And you said what you just have to be ready.
Just have to be ready.
That's also a little confusing thing. Like, are we going to know we're ready when it's happening or what? I mean, you know, that's interesting.
There's a very old, and I don't have it, I don't have it memorized at all, but it's called the Desiderata by Goethe, G-O-T-H-E, a German philosopher. And it would basically, it's like, whenever you make a decision, like you commit to something that you want, the universe conspires with you to get the ball rolling in the right way. I think once we have a vision, that if we can just go one step at a time, instead of like leaps and bounds, you know, just have that just one step at a time, the vision is easier to see. It gets clearer and clearer. Hmm. And it can be like, I want to perform in a really big way. Yeah. But sometimes it gets clearer by shrinking, and sometimes it gets clearer by expanding. And I don't know. All ideas are good ones. Doesn't mean you have to do them.
Right.
You know? Put them in your pocket for later.
I agree.
Do them
right,
and see
yeah.
them. And there is no fail. In my world, there That's is right. no fail. There's just like another way that didn't work.
Exactly.
You know?
It's all experiment, I find.
All experiment, and no experience is wasteful. None.
No.
I thought about some demos that I've made that I produced the demo. Like, I found the material and I kind of directed myself, and I found the wonderful music to go with the demo, and I love the demo, but it turns out I like the production more than I like my voice. So then I gave that demo to my voiceover coach to critique, and she's like, well, all sounds the same. And I'm like, yeah, I know. But I still, it is still a good process, and it's like, now I can hear how it all sounded the same, and how,
yes.
what I needed to work on, and all that other kind of stuff.
Yes.
So it all matters. It all matters.
That's right.
And when you're ready, you do the next thing.
That's right.
You know?
I do. You know, I got really tired from a pretty tight performing schedule a couple of years ago, and was pretty dark about the point of it all, you know?
Right.
And I wasn't really taking a break, but I definitely was not actively pursuing performing along with my teaching, and was just sort of despondent about it. And this funny thing started happening is that there's a little bit of a delay effect in the work you put out.
Yeah.
To it seeming like you're getting some response. And so here in Eugene, you know, at the grocery store or whatever, you know, oh, I you're everywhere. And I'm like, no, I'm actually not. I'm under the covers or whatever. But like 2 years later, after I did something, you know,
yeah.
it would sort of create, there was a momentum that I had no idea was going to continue. And maybe, you know, stopping feeling so desperate or driven to make things yeah. work in that moment might have helped little bit. I don't know, but
sometimes the best thing we can do for ourselves, in my opinion, is to just let go and relax a little
right.
bit and not push so hard
exactly.
for the next thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Right? Or be so perfect or whatever.
Yeah.
It.
And come on, it's got to be fun. Like some part of an artistic life has to be fun, or what the hell are you doing?
Oh my gosh, yes.
I mean, even if it's, you know, it's all work. I mean, there is work involved. You don't just, I mean, that was always my thing. It's like, well, you obviously just got this song and then like it's perfect
right.
and you know everything.
Right.
I mean, that was like, what do you mean you practice? What do you mean you change keys? What do you mean that you like work on these endings over?
Right.
Like what? Like, I just figured you're a professional singer. So like, how hard can that be?
Right.
Yeah, sure, there's practice a couple times, but like you're perfect in every way.
Yeah. You're so right. I mean, it is. There's so many levels. It's fun.
Yeah.
And the work is fun.
Yeah.
It's always like, well, let me try this. I'm going to try this. I mean, personally, I have to ingest the words of a song.
Yeah.
In a way that at some point I feel like they're my words.
You
know? So that's where I find some freedom. And that does take repetition and it takes time with it. But I love those questions. You know, I get to play.
Yeah.
In asking those questions, like, what does this mean to me? Or what if I do like this little lift inside my mouth? You know, like, would that change the sound or whatever?
That right there is so cool.
Yeah, right? It's so creative.
Really cool.
It's like a creative way to live a professional life. And my teaching, you know, sometimes it felt like my teaching would take away from my performing, you know, back in the day, you know, like that. Like, am I squandering my performing energy, you know, by teaching? And today my teaching is by far the most creative thing I do. I never expected that. Just to see, because every person is coming to singing with a whole different psyche, a different musical experience.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's sort of like, how does this work? And I've also, it seems like I think I've found a lot of healing through my own technical hurdles in the voice.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I always knew that my extreme high notes in opera, like, sure, I could muscle them up there and they would sound opera-y, you uh-huh. know, they'd sound classical, but I knew in my body that there was something that was working too hard, that felt, it just felt and sounded like I was working too hard. I was like, yeah. What was going on there? I'm doing the right things. I'm lifting my soft palate or using air. And so this is kind of a digression, but through straining my back and having a few years of chronic back pain, and finding my way into Pilates and reading about the nervous system, I started experimenting with things that just don't make any sense. Like, if you think about your pelvis widening, like for some reason in a neurological way, it can make the voice just, woo, there it is. That was the voice I was looking for 20 years. I know, how could that be?
I totally believe that 100%. Because that's voiceover. I mean, if you're in a crappy mood, and even if you smile, you're going to sound right. like you're in a crappy mood. So if you're thinking it in your head, it's yes. going to come right out of your mouth.
Yes.
So I believe that 100%. And that's amazing.
It is amazing. Like the body has a wisdom about using the voice musically as well as talking.
Yeah.
That we actually can trust. Like, we don't have to override that into right. like some idea of perfection.
Right.
That's amazing to me.
That is amazing.
I don't know if it works that way for everybody, but
right.
when you think of, like, oh, that cute little puppy, you know, like that right. makes your voice do something that is actually right. bringing together some very fine coordination in the body. So we just take it for granted. So it's,
well, isn't folk performance, acting performance, all these things that require the whole body mm-hmm. as your instrument, mm-hmm. it makes sense to, like, not abuse your body in order to get what you want, because it can be naturally there.
Yes.
Whether it's a high note or, like, I think your body will find it. I mean,
right.
I'm still struggling with something vocally, which is still trying to push, like trying to force.
Yes.
sound and air out, and it's just been in the last year that I'm like, volume is not everything, Jojo. Just, you know, like, volume is not your default. Like, just back, let the mic do its thing, right. and I can not have to, and it takes the push away. But it's such
yeah,
an interesting,
I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's just like, well, where else are you pushing? And I'm just like, everywhere. Back off, don't judge me.
Right. Yes.
So,
yeah, that's, I mean, such a parallel. Like, I can hear in recordings, rehearsal recordings, like, I'm not aware of it as it's happening, but I'm like, yeah, you're holding yeah. on, because you think you're controlling that breath so good.
Right.
But there's just you can hear it. There's sometimes a deeper place yeah. to, like, let go.
Yeah. And that's
where the beauty
from
is.
From one Virgo to another, sometimes that's pretty hard.
It is hard.
You know, to just let it be what it's going to be, whether it's
right.
good sound or bad sound or
that's right
or whatever.
Let it be sometimes, you know, replacement, turning my attention to something else is a good short-term it can lead to long-term changes, you know, like, instead of thinking relaxing, because my first thought is I can't relax,
right,
you know?
Yeah. How am I supposed to relax then?
Right,
I've got
right.
things to do. Yeah.
But I can breathe in, like, I'm in, like, seeing the most beautiful bird. Like,
right.
You know, just to open up, something like that.
Totally. Well, yeah. Working with you, one of the things that we talked a lot about was not talking in terms of singing, but talking in terms of pictures and using, like, mm-hmm. you know, what does this feel like when you do this instead, and pretend you're a fox, like, doing this thing. And I'm just like, okay, that makes totally no sense, but it totally worked.
Right. So, I know.
You know, who's to say what works and what's not? So I understand that teaching is, because everybody is different.
Mm-hmm.
And what technique might be the be-all, end-all for one person and not so much for someone else.
Exactly.
Because I get too hooked on technique. I want to know exactly the steps for technique. Right. And then that's just exactly where my mind goes.
You know what's so weird about music and voice? You know, these two meldings. I feel like the mechanics of voice, and maybe we'll throw in language there too. Mechanics of voice, I think, are right-brained. Their parasympathetic nervous system, their animalist, it's animalistic. Right. It's like from, you know, the mating calls, all that stuff. And then you have language, which is, I believe, left brain, and then music. So,
right.
You know, music mastery is a whole nother thing. You know, it's like a lot of people have good ears, but some, you know, music is a language or a code. And sometimes some people need to some solidity there, you know, some. A lot of people don't need to learn how to read music, but some people need the structure of music so that their voice has a scaffolding to let go and flop around. I mean, I don't, you know, but it's certainly not necessary. It just, again, it depends on where the person's coming from. But to me, that's kind of a paradox. Like, how do we get you to feel like you're drunk singing and then also sing the notes right, you know?
Right. Fun.
I know. It is fun. It's always a little bit of a puzzle. So.
And do you like performing?
It does something for my soul that is, it's a very rich thing to do, you know, for a living. And yes, I like it. Yes, I do. I feel like there's an analogy I feel like it's like having a kid, because there's hard times, you know, or there's challenges, and there's these places where I have like a lot of self-doubt, but it's so rewarding.
Yeah.
You know, I love it. I love it more than anything. It's just that, is it fun? Is it my happy place, so to speak? Maybe, you know what? I'm never more present than when I'm in a groove on stage. You know, I do know that. And to get to have that experience, somebody who's neurotic, you know,
well,
in their daily life.
Yeah, I don't know how you can have any doubt when you're just like, I love it. Like, that's how I feel all the time. Like, I am so lucky to have the job that I have, and I love it. And some days you just got to make the donuts.
Right.
Right? You just got to get up, get off your ass, and go make the donuts.
Right.
It's not always going to be perfect. It's not always going to be pretty. Sometimes it's just making donuts. It's the slog of the job.
Right.
But that's, for me, that's only 15%. And 15% of the time, I don't like myself. I don't like anybody. Don't talk to me. I hate you all.
Right.
But I live the 85% life, which is 85% of the time, I love it. So for me, if you're just like, I love it, and you come alive when you're just like, yeah, I really dig it. The rest is just 15%.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I love seeing my friends at rehearsal. I love working in, you know, like just looking stuff up about songs or, you know, I don't know. Just like there's a lot that is so wonderful. I love our community of artists here. You know, we are lucky to know each other and still get to meet fresh faces coming to town. But
No, please don't doubt your love of it, because you light up when you talk about it. You do. You light up about it. So it's like you found your space and your people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
When's your next performance? Or do you have anything on the books yet?
I do. Well, I mean, I have a couple, like a house concert, concert at a winery in Roseburg.
Called Marchand. Cool.
And then the first thing I'm doing is a fundraiser for Lane Arts Council.
Very cool.
Yeah. And so that is a house concert. And then another, my next shed concert is in May. And that's going to be just Natalie and I, voice and piano. And I didn't want it to be a tribute concert or a theme. I just want to sing some songs. So
nice.
That's what we're going to do for that. And I'm excited about that I have a few months to just ask the question, what do I want to sing?
Yeah. You know, so. And you can sing anything that you want. So
pretty
that's
got
to be fun.
Pretty much. I can slide the shed of, you know, Champions traditional American music, but I can slide some Bjork or, you know.
Oh, that's
just the modern stuff right. in once in a while. So
awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
That sounds amazing. Well, yeah. Where can people find out more about you or book you for a show?
Sure.
Or buy your music or whatevs?
Well, I'm at SiriaVic.com. That's my website. I'm also post things about upcoming shows on Facebook at SiriaVic. You know, it's like a regular page.
Yeah.
I have both, I think. Instagram, Twitter, and
whatever else there is. Oh, do you have a YouTubes?
Oh, and I have YouTube. Yeah, I have some of my recordings and live performances are on YouTube. Yes.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
And they can listen to you on Spotify
and
that we
Spotify.
Know now. Spotify and
iTunes. CD Baby.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to go put you on my playlist when
yeah,
I get home.
Yeah, awesome.
That would be so amazing. I'll hear like Adele and then Siri Vic. And
I
that
love it.
Will like blow my mind. That would be amazing. Thank you so much for coming coming today and telling us all your secrets of performing and singing.
Well, thank you so much. This is really fun. So good to see you.
Nice to see you too.
And now for some housekeeping. HugeCast would like to thank its contributors, volunteers, and sponsors. A huge thanks goes out to Mark Davis at Eugene Tech for providing guidance and enthusiasm. To Trifoya for providing equipment, space, beverages, and the occasional pizza. And to That Supergirl for providing web hosting. Our producer is Kimberly Noel. Music and soundscapes conceived by Mike Jones. Audio editors include Mike Jones and Christopher Mitchell. Audio engineer is Christopher Mitchell. HugeCast hosts are the amazing Adam Wendt and the delightful JoJo Jensen. If you like what you hear, please give us a review. 5 stars would be nice. And who knows, we might even read your comments during the show. So thanks for listening, or sleeping through it. Either way, thanks.